It's Carmen.
And this is Lily.
And welcome to the
Murder Show.
Murder Show.
We're here.
Okay, so we're here and we're coming out to you guys with an all new brand spanking new case because this is literally a current event, you guys. And I really wanted to cover it because it's all new. Also, it kind of relates. I don't know if you guys have seen like the rumors that they know who the Zodiac is now.
No, but it's not true. It's
yeah, like okay, scam. That's what I think. Yeah, is it?
It's a total scam.
Okay, I think it was too easy, but...
No, they've made these, like, claims before about other random serial killers
totally,
in the same group,
totally.
And it's like, no, it's just not right.
Yeah, and so, okay, so what I wanted to do is because I thought that was sketchy and I thought that was going to kind of give us, like, this blue ball feeling and, like, get excited, and of course it wasn't going to be true. So I wanted to do another, like, current event that actually, like, a cold case has actually been solved. And unfortunately, it's not one of like these big ones like the Zodiac, but this is a cold case in France, and it was actually really, really big in France, specifically in Paris. And it was just solved last week.
Oh, so, wow. Yeah,
just solved last week. So I'm super excited about it. And I heard about it because my boyfriend is literally like obsessed with reading the newspaper.
And like the actual newspaper.
Like the actual newspaper, but also like sports news. And there's one Spanish newspaper called Marca, and he was reading that. Okay, so this is October 2nd. He's reading that, and all of a sudden, he, like, gasps, and he tells me, and he's like, you have to read this, and I'm going to send you the link to it. And pretty much, it was this article that was saying, a man committed suicide and left a note confessing that he was a serial killer 35 years ago. Okay. So that's the article, and that's all I had for a while, and it really piqued my interest because I was like, huh? Like, is this for real? Like, cap?
Yeah, or is
no?
this like a, yeah, is it cap? Like, is it a fake confession?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I was like, okay, cool, send that to me. And I was busy, but then I was like, ooh, I really want to look into this. And then once I started looking into this, I was like, I have to share it with you guys. So, and it literally just happened. So I'm going to tell you the story now, but first with my sources. So the Marca newspaper, Wikipedia, of course, even though that was like literally four sentences translated from French, that didn't make sense. But anyway, Wikipedia, the BBC, France 24. And with all of these newspapers, like they didn't have an author. So pretty much it's just all like the International Associated Press, because this is like such a current thing that they're like pushing out the info. So as this case develops too, and maybe we'll learn more, we'll be updating you, but I just want to tell you what has happened like right now, because all of these were written October 1st or October 2nd. So that was only 2 weeks ago. Okay. So we're going to go back a couple decades. All right. So we're going to go back to 1986. Okay. So Cecile Bloch is an 11-year-old girl living in the 19th arrondissement in Paris. On the morning of May 5th, 1986, she's leaving her apartment building to go
Wait,
to
how
school.
Old is she? She's 9?
She's 11.
11, okay.
She's 11, yeah. So she's little, but she's old enough to, like, go to school by herself, you know, especially...
It's like 5th or 6th grade.
Yeah, 5th or 6th grade. I think 6th grade. And she's... It's walking distance, no? And it's Paris, and it's like, I mean, this is what all the school children do. They all walk. And her mom, who she lives with, is a working mom. Both her parents work. So this is not like a weird thing. This is something that she does a lot and is normal.
And what
okay?
year was it again?
1986.
Everyone walked. Like, yeah, literally, yeah. That was so normal.
Yeah, and in a city, like, your school is close. It's like the neighborhood school. It's not like us, like, living in a suburb and you walk a mile to your school. No. So yeah. It's close by. And while she's walking out of her apartment building, she's grabbed and taken down to the basement of the apartment building. There, she's raped, stabbed in the chest, and strangled to death.
Oh my gosh.
So shortly after noon, her mother called the apartment like she did every single day to see if she had made it home for lunch. Because in a lot of European schools, not all of them, but a lot of European schools, they have split schedule. Like the school that I worked at in Spain, they had a split schedule where you had your morning schedule. And then a lot of kids go home for lunch. They don't have lunch at school. And then they go back for the afternoon and they actually stay like later, more until like 4 o'clock. So that's kind of like what was going on here. Okay. And the mom calls the apartment and she's not there. So of course, maybe she's thinking that, oh, she stayed at school for lunch, because I mean, it is an option. So she calls the school and she's informed that Cecile has not shown up for school that day. So Suzanne, the mom, and Jean-Pierre, the dad. That
has to be the scariest thing in the world.
Yes. Like, can you imagine? That is,
I can't.
Horrible. Like, just chills all over your body. And obviously they freak out immediately and they leave work. They alert the guard at the apartment building. So the apartment has security, or like a doorman, whatever. So they go to this security guard and they alert like the police, obviously. And everyone starts searching for Cecile. So then during the search, they end up finding her body in the basement of the building. She's found half naked under a piece of old carpet.
Oh my gosh, the poor baby. Yeah. That is so sad.
Yeah. It's so upsetting. Thank goodness the police are doing a really good job right away, getting reports from literally all the neighbors in the building, everyone that was around, the entire family. And they talked to, actually, Cecile's half-brother lived with them as well. And the half-brother gave a really good testimony that gave them a lot of information. It's just sad that, of course, it's kind of like sad and like it had to be the brother. You know what I mean? It could have been any of the neighbors or anything, but of course it was the brother that then, looking back on his day, was like, oh my God. And like, feel, you know, like, okay, anyway.
Feels a lot of guilt for it because now he so connects much. All the dots. Yeah,
exactly. So he's giving his testimony and he's saying that he recalls seeing a strange man that he's never seen in the building before, in the building, in the elevator. And he's smiling, very sure of himself. And he said to the brother, have a very, very good day. And so,
wait, do you know if the sister was in the elevator with him?
No, she was by herself.
She was obviously by herself, but at that moment.
At that moment, no, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that this is the half-brother, and I think that maybe he was coming up after. Like, I think it was after. Okay. It was already done because, the guy was, like, smiling and stuff. And, well, it's kind of hard. Like, there's not, like, an exact timeline, but I know for sure that the half-brother and Cecile weren't together.
Okay.
So, and the police think that the suspect was, like, hanging around the apartment before and after. And just, like,
and after? Around.
Yeah, yeah. Ew. So, we just don't know when he saw him, but he saw the suspect. And he saw him good enough to be able to give a description for a sketch to the police. And this is, like, the famous sketch that comes out from this case. So, the half-brother, his name is Luke, by the way, he describes the suspect having an acne-scarred face. So, like, having... Not, I mean, maybe not like active breakouts, but like acne scarring.
Yeah, like, right? The indentions on your face.
Yeah, exactly like that. So this sketch was released to the public, and the nickname for the suspect is coined by one of the journalists that published the sketch. And the nickname is Le Grelé, which means the pockmarked man. So from now on, he's known as Le Grelé. And when you give a nickname to someone, they seem like...
Become infamous.
You know,
yeah, even if they're, like, ain't shit, they just become infamous. Yeah,
exactly. So the police did a really good job, and they collected a ton of evidence from the basement. Even evidence that they had no idea what they would be able to do with. Like, this is still already before DNA, but they're collecting a shit ton of DNA evidence and keeping it and like knowing that it could possibly be useful, even though they had
no idea. Like in the future, who knows what could happen.
Yeah, exactly. Which thank God they did. And apparently they were working in the basement that had no electricity and like no lights. So they're just working like with these like little flashlights trying to find everything. But they did a really good job investigating. Although they didn't catch the suspect right away, this work of collecting the evidence will really help them later on.
Okay.
So then in 1987, we're going to fast forward a year. 21-year-old German au pair Imgard Muller is found dead in her Paris apartment in the Marais. So she was working as an au pair for a French family. It was determined that she was sexually assaulted as well. And then as they're going into the apartment, they also find her boss, Gilles Politi, murdered as well.
So is that the father or the mother? Sorry.
That's the father of the family. And they're just both like in the apartment. And there's not a lot of details.
I don't understand. This is not even nearly the same MO. Like one is like pedophilia, a child. And then one is like a double murder where there's a lot more risk involved because it's a lot harder to kill an adult man and a 21-year-old woman at the same time than an 11-year-old girl who's by herself.
So hard. So hard. And there's not a lot of like details on this specific case. Like, again, there might be more details coming out later. But we only know that they were found dead. And at this point, the police don't know and don't think it's connected. Right? This is just like a one-off double murder. So, and we don't really know that much about it. However, Gilles Politi, the dad, he had been restrained using skilled police or military techniques. So,
oh my God,
I know. I know.
It's like, oh my God, you were trained to do this. It's so fucked.
Yeah, so that might be a reason why he was able to subdue both of them. So the police are already thinking, how does he know this? Like, what does that mean? You know, like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Then.
But they didn't connect the cases, right?
They didn't connect the cases yet. And then, okay, so now I'm also going
to. Because why would you? You would never think that's the same person.
Yeah, exactly. However, I will say that also at this case, they are collecting DNA.
Okay.
So, then. This is not exactly in chronological order, but around this time and in the same like areas and neighborhoods of Paris, so everything was happening like inside Paris, but also like the surrounding suburbs. So it's like literally this whole regional thing where there's a bunch of rapes and murders going on, specifically in the years 1986 and 1987. And to each of these ones, the police are collecting evidence.
It's not isolated to one neighborhood, so they don't know if they're really all connected.
No, it's literally all over the place. I'll post a map on the Instagram. Like, it's so spread out. The one common denominator is that it's in Paris. But not even Paris, just central, like also the suburbs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Right. So in 1986, an 8-year-old girl, Sarah, was raped. 1986, 11-year-old girl, Natalie. I don't have their last names because they weren't released, which I think is to protect their identity. So good. 1987, 26-year-old Andrea is raped. 1987, 14-year-old Marianne. 1987, 29-year-old Lori.
It's so crazy that it's the age range is so wide. I can't get over it.
Yeah, it's super, super wide. And then we have like a big gap of years, and then we get 11-year-old Ingrid in 1994, and we also, this case has the least
amount of... In 1994. So 8 years after this, the first girl was murdered.
Yes, 8 years after, and we also get what police know as the last murder, which is of Corinne Leroy, just outside of Paris. She was 19 years old. Also in 1994. So these specific
rapes. So how many people were murdered? Mm-hmm.
There was four.
No, four. There would had to be more than that. You just named way more than that.
Those were rapes. So six rapes.
Oh, okay.
Six rapes and four murders. Sorry, that wasn't clear. That wasn't clear. But my point is that, like, this is all happening, but it all seems, like, really disjointed. However,
also, because the MO's changing, it's, like, one's a kid, yeah, and it's a two adults, and then it's some are raped and murdered. Like, it just doesn't, exactly. It's not, like, an escalation. It's, like, very erratic. But maybe he knew that to keep people off his fucking case.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Oh, my gosh, erratic. Of course. However, as we get into the 90s, thank God, at each of these, the police got DNA. So as we get into being able to make DNA profiles, the police are able to connect all of these and get a DNA profile and actually know that all of these are from the same person.
Wow.
So as we get into the 90s, we just still don't know
who it is. So they've never been arrested or anything.
Right. We can't match it to anyone, but we finally know that this is all the same person, and that does help a lot, of course. And so this is just gaining more notoriety for the,
of course, like the police all like connected it. They're like, what the heck? It's probably when they connected like the Golden State Killer to like all the areas that he was attacking. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like multiple people. They realized it was one person, you know, it's like so crazy.
It's exactly that. Super, super, super crazy. And like, obviously this is like becoming like sensationalized in the media. Legrelle is like this figure now, and this becomes like really infamous. In three of those rapes, it was reported to the police that the suspect had identified himself as a police officer in order to gain their trust.
He probably did it to the little girl too.
Yeah, so
that's
this is
so disarming. This is literally my least favorite shit that happens. Like, someone you're supposed to trust, especially as a child.
Yes.
Who's someone you, it's the same, like the thing that happened with Sarah Everts in the UK. Like,
yeah.
The police.
Absolutely. Also, there was a case in Rancho Penasquitos, my area in San Diego, where, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the name. That's so horrible. But we have like this underpass bridge. And there's a memorial for this girl who was thrown over the bridge by a police officer. And, like, kids go hiking there to smoke weed and shit. But, like, yeah. That might be a case that I do next, you guys. It's really horrible. But this is giving, like, this case gives really Golden State Killer. Like, there's so many parallels.
Yeah, because he also wanted to be a police officer too, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's really similar in a lot of ways, just like less information about it, but hopefully more comes out. So even with all this good investigative work to connect all these cases and everything, the collection of the DNA, creating the profile, et cetera, the cases eventually go cold because they just can't go any further. So it goes cold for...
Yeah, I mean, you're just kind of waiting until you can... hopefully match that DNA somehow until he slips up and you find him, I guess.
Unless he does something else, which you don't want it to happen, but if he does something else, maybe you can catch him.
So. Yeah, until he slips up, yeah. But also, it's, like, it's before you can, like, really, like... It's not now where you can literally track someone's phone 24/7 and you can figure out in their car, like, because of all the, like, photos you take on bridges and, like, all that stuff. It's so before that time.
And pretty much the only other thing that they have other than the DNA profile is the original police sketch. And that's really hard. I mean, yes, he has, like, the distinguished, like, sketches acne marks, but like, come on.
Sketches don't, like...
No,
I mean, they have solved some cases, I guess, but so many times they all look the same. Like, they always look like 100%. An indescript white man that can look like fucking anybody.
Like, yeah, and a lot of police, like, criticize the sketch for that, and... I'll post on the Instagram and you guys can tell me if the sketch like looks like our found out person, and you can see, and maybe this one is better than others. I think it's not so bad, but still.
But
I
also mean, it's just once you have the match, your brain, like, you I want it to look like that person. So you make it look like that person. But if you could pull 10 other people, it looks like
it would look like them as well.
Yeah.
It's also because
that's what's happening with the Zodiac article. Sketch. They're, everyone's like, oh, it looks like this guy, but it looks like that guy because he wanted to look like that guy.
Really bad. Like, really bad. Honestly. Like, this one I think is a really bad as well, but I mean, it has like maybe a little bit more, like more distinguishing eyes, I feel. But it's also because all the newspapers now that I'm reading, they put the guy side by side to the sketch as well, obviously. Yeah. So, like, I've been conditioned, right? Okay, so, yeah, the cases go cold. Then we're going to fast forward about 20 years. And we're fast forwarding to 2015.
Okay, so the last rape was in 1994 and it wasn't a murder.
There was a rape in 1984. There was also a murder in 1994.
Okay.
Both. That the police were able to connect to the same person.
Okay,
so now we're fast forwarding to 2015. In 2015, the French police start a campaign, like many do, to start looking into their cold cases and start to work on these cases again, which is amazing when they do that. It really,
especially like now, because so much. Like, it's like what Crime Junkie says, the season of justice. Like, there's so much genealogical stuff now that, like, if you open up those cold cases, you can find out what happened.
Definitely. And obviously they have new technology, everything, like what you said. So great move. Good job, French police. And they had made all their connections before, but they start looking into all of them again. However, if I will say one critique about the police, even though they did a great job, is they could have expanded their scope a bit more outside of the ones they had already connected during this, like, revival of the investigation. And I'll get back to that later. Okay, so in line with the police looking into cold cases more, the media is also rehashing everything again. They're paying a lot more attention to the cases, and they're doing, like, a lot of investigative work, too. I can't read French newspapers, but the French newspapers have like a lot of good. I found these like not really old ones, but these ones that are like scanned newspapers, like paper newspapers from 2015, and they put them online, and they made really good graphics and like maps and pictures. Like, they're really doing like this sleuthing work, the media is, and putting it out into the public. It's really amazing. And also at this point, the police and the media are so, so confident that the killer has to be a part of the police. They know. Or at least they think. So they're going to try out a new method of investigation. And they're going to... Oh, because also... Sorry, let me go back. They know it for sure because as they're looking back into their cold cases... They also find out that with some of the cases, the suspect had used police car to lure the women, had used handcuffs, the professional restraint techniques, etc. So they're like, we should really just like dive into this. And they do.
Mm-hmm.
They decide to look at a certain sector of the police, which is called the gendarmerie, which is like police/army that is in charge of internal security. So I think it's more of like our National Guard, that type of thing. It's not like a local police. Okay. And I don't really, like, I couldn't find how
I think that's common exactly in Europe, though, because like Italy has like the Campionari, which just, and then the Polizia, and then they have like the army that's like outside certain areas. Yeah,
it's exactly like that. And I'm not sure exactly how they knew to look specifically into this sect of the police or like this organization.
Maybe
of the
it's police. Like the certain binds and like if it was more advanced, because I no offense, I don't think like any normal police officer, like I don't think the guy on the traffic beat on my corner can like put that two stuff. People down, like in a male, an adult male and an adult woman. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. It's probably that totally makes sense. So they decide that they are going to look at the former and present members of the gendarmerie, but mostly past, because obviously at this point the guy has to be like 50 or 60 years old. and they're screening potential suspects, and they settle on a final 750 potential suspects. They narrowed it down to 750, which that's still a lot, but that is low enough for them, because in their minds, they're just going to swab every single one of the 750, see if it gets a match, if it doesn't. But if it does,
great. Then that's your guy, yeah.
Exactly. So they sent out summon letters to all these 750 former gendarmerie. And they have to come to Paris to get questioned. And I don't know exactly if they stated that they would have to give a DNA sample, but I'm sure, just because of what happened next. So I'm going to... Oh, also, sorry. That was in 2021. So like last month, that's when they sent out the letters. So from 2015 to 2021, they were doing this process of narrow down.
So in 2015, they reopened the case. And yes. Then over the next 5-6 years, they narrowed it down to 750 people that could be there. And yes. Then they sent a summons to all of these people, like in the mail. Like,
exactly.
We need to talk to you / take your DNA.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that was like last month.
Okay.
Okay, so then fast forward again, but not that much, to 2 weeks ago. On September 28th, the wife of Francois Veuve, I can't say French last names, to be honest, so I'm just going to say
Veuve. You're doing a way better job than I would do.
It's really like some of the most difficult pronunciation, but Francois Veuve, the wife, she reports her husband, Francois, missing to police. She hasn't seen him in, like, 2 days. She hasn't heard from him.
So nothing. Last month or this month? Like he got 2 weeks letter, ago. He got a letter and then he's been missing
exactly,
for 2 days.
Exactly. Okay. And police go, the thing is that she lives in the south of France. Paris is in the north of France. So she reports him missing. And I guess the police had a really, really good communication with the people. And well, I guess if it's like a national case at this point, I don't know. Anyway, the police go, oh, that's interesting, because we're already looking for him because he did not show up to his summons. We summoned him and he was supposed to show up. He did not show up to be questioned. So we're already looking for him. So that's curious that he's not at your house. Right? Yeah. Okay. A little bit about Francois. At this time, 2021, he's 59 years old. He's living in the south of France, kind of near Montpellier. So it's like the southwest, I believe, southwest, but not on the coast. And he has 2 children and he lives with them there. Okay. So police go on a mission to find this guy.
It's like a full-on manhunt.
It's a full-on manhunt because it's obviously suspicious. So they look for him for 2 days and they finally find Francois. He's in a resort. Oh, maybe Montpellier is by the coast. I have no idea, you guys, because I think he was like at a seaside resort. But they find him there at the resort. They enter his room and he's dead. He had committed suicide. And he had left a suicide note. So the police read the note.
Yeah, Montpellier is right on the water.
It is. Okay, perfect. So yes, on the water. I can't remember what I was thinking. Maybe I was thinking of Aix-en-Provence or something. So in the note, he confesses. He says, I am a serial killer. I am Legrede. And the police, like... are more inclined to believe him because obviously they're like looking for Legrelli.
Everything
and this
that
guy
happened,
was on
like,
the line.
We just summoned him. He didn't show up. We're looking for the serial killer. He just admitted to it. It seems like it's not like some random guy out of nowhere. The wife just calls, my husband killed himself and left a note. Like all of this stuff leading up to it made him kill himself.
Yeah. All the stuff leading up to it. And they're already inclined to believe him, but obviously they have to do their due diligence, right? And they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that yes, this guy is telling the truth and this is him. And
especially if they're about to announce to the public, like, this 40-year-old cold case almost is solved. Like, yeah. They have to do the DNA evidence because they have all the DNA evidence. Like, they just have to.
Exactly. They have to, and it's going to be so satisfying because they take the DNA from Mr. Francois, and it matches. Thank God it matches perfectly. And so they connect him at least to all of those 10, the 6 rapes and the 4 murders that they had connected before. So that they know for sure. Okay. Again, about Francois. He had been a motorcyclist gendarme in the Republican Guard between 1983 and 1988.
Okay. So do you know what I don't know what any of that means.
I don't know. I guess he's just a policeman on the motorcycle that does like patrolling. Pretty much.
Okay. So wait, what was it called again?
The Republican Guard. I have no idea what that is, to be honest. I didn't look it up either. But it's like the gendarmerie or whatever. And then he moved to Marseille, where he was also a policeman, and then later in Montpellier, where he was a policeman. He had been a member of the police union, even. Okay.
I think it's like those. So they basically guard important public buildings in Paris.
Oh.
As well as keeping public order in Paris. And then they also do like security services for highest national personalities and important foreign guests.
So that's a really important job.
Yeah, that's not just like, yeah, I feel like it's not a normal police officer. It's like a different,
Yeah, for sure. Fuck. And also, he's like 20. He was born in 19. They don't know exactly if it was 1961 or 1962. So he would have been like in his young 20s to get that job.
22, 23.
Yeah,
with that job. When he first committed the first murder.
Yeah. So young.
Yeah.
Very young.
God, that's so scary that someone that young can just be
crazy. I know. It's not like this like scary old man that we all like look out for that looks creepy. Like this is a normal like young kid. If I
just saw
a
21-year-old guy, in the elevator of my building that just told me to have a good day, like I would not think it's weird.
Yeah, definitely. The only thing that made the brother think is weird is because they knew all the neighbors in the building and he obviously wasn't a neighbor, but he's a normal kid. You know, he has, like, acting marks from, like, being a teenager, like, normal-ass kid.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't think anything of him at all.
So weird.
He also, like, in the last couple years before he committed suicide, so, like, these last couple years, he was involved in municipal management, and he was an elected counselor. So he was, like, a fucking politician as well. Like, bruh, what? Okay. In the suicide note, he said that he was out of control when he was young and, like, whatever, mistake. But once he...
Oh, yeah, just small. I was just crazy back then.
I was crazy. God, that's literally what this guy said. I was fucking
crazy.
Oh, no,
you literally took people's lives.
Literally. But that is literally his excuse. And he writes it in his suicide note.
He couldn't have come up with something better.
He's like, out of control.
These are your last words on earth. And I was just crazy back then.
Literally. Yeah. And then he's like trying to not make excuses, but be like, but it's not that bad. Because then he goes, as soon as I was married and I started my family, I stopped everything in 1997. So I could have kept going, but I wanted to be a good dad. Is literally what he says in the suicide note.
So he didn't get married until he was like 35, 36.
He might have been married already, but he hadn't had a kid. I think that he stopped when he had his first kid. And which the kid is so like our age.
Because I'm born in 97.
Yeah. So sorry, dude. Or sorry, girl. I don't know. But... that was literally an excuse. But you know what is curious about that is because remember I told you that the last known murder that
I was about to ask, wasn't it 94?
Is 94. And here he is in the suicide note saying, I stopped in 97. So this is like the
more.
There's more. There's 100% more. And this is what I was saying. I wish the police, although they did a great job, like, with what they had, they could have expanded a bit more, in my opinion, to see if there was anything.
And also, if he lived in the south of France, there's gotta be something in the south of France.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, if you notice, like, the first group of murders and rapes is 1986-1987, and then the second group, like the last two, are 1994. So you can't tell me that he was just sitting by those years. There has to be something in the middle.
Especially
that, like,
if he would do like multiple times, like he would have spurts. Like, you can't say that.
Yeah. Like, would he really take a 7-year break? That doesn't seem realistic to me.
I mean, you never know, but I don't think it's common.
No, I don't think it's common either. I mean, obviously, I guess it's possibility, but I really think there's more, especially if he is confessing in his suicide note that since 1997, he abandoned criminal activity. Yeah. So there's 100% more criminal activity before then. So while this has solved several cold cases, we're left wondering and we're left with even more questions. And
I'm sure, though, if they look at any, they're probably going to, in the next year or two, connect a lot more cases to him.
I really, really hope so.
They're probably going to retest some DNA, too, that they never, mm-hmm. like, tested yet. Or
mm-hmm. I really hope so. I mean, they've done a good job so far, I believe, with their circumstances. So I have, like, no doubt that they would just, like, stop, even though he's been caught. Like, I really, really hope they take this and use it as an opportunity to, like, really, like, check their boxes and make sure,
mm-hmm.
dot their I's, you know. Just to finish up, so the family lawyer of Cecile's family has been like the main person to speak out since the solving of the case. His name is
Didier. And Cecile was the first girl that was murdered.
Yes, exactly. So her family is still really involved, and they have a lawyer. They have like a lawyer on retainer just in case this happens, you know, just to like speak for them. They're really, really involved with it. So the lawyer, Didier Sebon, thanked police for their work, but told the Associated Press that it's painful to know that Francois took his secrets with him, because obviously they don't know everything because he killed himself. And it would have been good to see him in prison. It would have been good to get the details, to get closure for the family.
Mm-hmm.
He also said, "We are going to ask the justice to continue investigating to find out if he has been able to have accomplices, because they don't know if he did it alone. They just want the answers, but they don't know. And to also determine the number of victims, because he also thinks that there's more." And he says the families must have answers. So this cold case was one of the biggest cold cases in the history of the Paris police. And they finally caught the serial killer and rapist known as the pockmarked man, who avoided capture for 35 years. His name was Francois Verove. He's dead now, and the case is solved. So the family has closure knowing what happened, but they also don't have closure because they don't get to see him get justice.
Don't have closure because, yeah. Like, haven't connected it yet or whatever.
Yeah, and that's the story. And if there's any updates, you know, check back here.
That's so crazy that it's all happening right now.
Yeah, and the parallels with Golden State Killer is just crazy. Obviously, this wasn't familial ideal. It was like ideal DNA. It was like direct DNA. But also, just like the MO of them is like kind of similar. Yeah, obviously, it's not similar. The couples, but having some rapes, having some murders, like that was interesting to me that they were similar in that way and that they evaded capture for so long.
So bizarre. It's so crazy. Yeah. It's so crazy that people can just stop. That's the craziest to me, that one day he just decided to stop. Why were you doing it at all in the first place?
Yeah, and we'll never get those answers. He was too much of a scaredy cat to be like, I know you're going to find me, so I'm going to...
Yeah, he couldn't even... Like, he got to be free, even though
he got to be free, have
four people's lives, and he took at least six women's, like, safety and comfort, mm-hmm. and, like, any feeling of peace they have in their lives.
Terrorizing the city of Paris.
Yeah. And then he just gets to go out on his own terms. I don't like that.
He just gets to chill on the beach. Like, bruh. He gets to be a politician being like, do this, do that. Like, you don't get to say shit.
I just don't like that he got to choose, like, how his story ended when no one else got to choose how theirs ended or, like, what happened to them. I just don't think that's fair.
You're so right. It's maddening. Like, I'm glad he's not on this earth anymore, but I wish he was in prison.
Yeah, I feel like French prisons, they're shanking.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I don't know. Let us know, is French prison good or bad? Is it Scandinavia-like or America-like?
Yeah, what's it closer to?
Probably America. But I don't know, France. I don't know. I have no idea.
I feel like France can be, like, fucking scary. So I feel like they do shank.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely
possible. I felt the least safe in France out of, like, everywhere I've been in Europe.
Oh, really? But in Paris, no?
Yeah, in Paris. In Paris, I did not feel safe in Paris.
Gosh, I feel like I felt both in Paris. I felt safe and unsafe at different times, and depending where you are, for sure. It's definitely one of those cities where you have to be more on guard than not.
Yeah, you have to be super on guard.
Yeah.
I felt really safe in the south of France. Like, when I was there, I was like, oh, it's really nice here.
I felt really safe there as well, for sure.
Any big city,
like, but it is true that, like, for example, in Madrid, like, I don't pay attention. Like, the worst thing that's going to happen to me is get my phone stolen, which happened. But I don't feel, like, any physical harm coming to me, although it is possible. But in Paris, I do maybe feel like it's a possibility.
I was with my friends in Paris, and we were just walking down the street, and a guy started beelining towards us and, like, tried, he smacked, like, all of our asses, but I had a really long coat on, and I have a flat ass, so he couldn't find my ass, so he kept walking. It's like, where's the butt? Oh, it doesn't exist. He literally saw that and just was like, I'm not interested. But then
that's
and then we all bent forward because we were in bikes, so we thought he was gonna steal the shit out of our baskets, but he didn't want to steal anything. He wanted to, like, harass us and grab our bodies.
Oh my god, what the fuck.
And that's, we were horrible, like, screaming, and everyone just stood there and watched. There were, like, 10 people standing there and watching, not doing anything, and I was like, I don't like Paris.
They're like, these girls are American, we don't care.
Yeah.
Oh fuck. Oh my gosh. I think where I've gotten the most sexually harassed is Madrid, which is weird because I also feel the safest there. But I get harassed a lot there, but I don't feel like they're going to touch me. But there's a lot, like, more than in the States, in San Diego, a lot of heckling. Like, so much heckling, so much whistling, so much honking the horns. So
it's
much,
like that in Italy, like, too. Like, ciao bella, ciao bella. Yeah.
But I don't feel like anyone will come up to me and hurt me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like they have tiny penises and they need a little ego boost for the day. Which it has, like, brought me to cry sometimes. But
I remember in Italy, at least I don't feel like a stone cold bodily. Bitch. Yeah. Like, when I would walk, I would just death glare everyone and be like, don't
you have to
say
do
anything
that
to me.
Yeah.
Like, you would just have to. And then I remember I came back to the US and I was like, oh my god, I need to smile, like, I can be normal.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to do that. I mean, it's better to be on guard. It's sad that we have to be like that, but until society changes, we have to. So
I don't think it will, honestly. People are gross.
People are fucking nasty. I fucking hate men. I really don't care if you're a man listening to this. Stop it.
Yeah, you just stand up for your, like, don't get mad at us for saying that. Get mad at your fellow men for being so shitty.
Hold them accountable. Make sure you hold your friends to the same standard. If you're saying, like, not all men, maybe not you, but hold your friends to the same standard.
Yeah, preach that at the men, not at the women, so we can feel safe, you know? Well, anyways, after our tangent.
That's our PSA, so. So, well, thank you so much.
That was so great, Carmen. It's so interesting learning about that. And it's like every country has to deal with their serial killers, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that we can finally, like, see after, like, the Dean Corll situation, see the police do, like, a good job. And actually, like, I know it took 35 years, but
I don't think the police in Houston collected one piece of evidence.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even though this one took a long time, they did do everything right and they did everything they could.
Yeah, at that time. Yeah, for sure.
And it's good to, like, see it get solved and have this closure and everything. So that's the positive of it. And, you know, one less serial killer, one less cold case.
And always, it's always that's a good to thing. Close them. Yeah, and it, it does give people closure.
Yeah. And I hope you enjoyed. Lily, do you want to tell our socials?
Yeah, so it's at Murder Show Pod for Instagram. Our email is murdershowpod@gmail.com. Our Patreon is Murder Show Pod. Let us know any suggestions, corrections. Mm-hmm. We're always mm-hmm. open to anything. If you guys want to hear a case, let us know. We'll put it in our list. And next week, I'm going to do something more current, too.
Okay.
No One Dies.
What a great change.
Yeah.
I like that. I know
this is called The Murder Show, but it's like a harrowing tale of someone escaping, so.
I love it. Okay, I'm so excited. Yeah. We can all tune into you. We're so, so excited to hear you. Thank you, Lily. That was awesome.
Thank you, Carmen. You did such a good job.
Okay, thanks.
Bye, guys.
Bye, you guys. Mwah.